Welcome to Create Consume. Welcome back, I should say, to Create Consume. So good to have you guys back. This is the podcast where we examine the life of the creative via conversation. And it is illuminating, infuriating, sometimes thought-provoking, but never, ever boring. Because the people on here are never boring, I make sure of that. And my next guest, Malachi, is no exception to the no boring rule. Not even a little bit of an exception. Malachi is actually the opposite of an exception to the never boring rule. This man is maddeningly interesting. He is a Renaissance man of the dopest ilk. The guy, you know, I'm not going to get started. I enjoyed every minute I had with him. You are going to as well, and you will see why I'm saying that in a minute and as we get started. But before we get started with Malachi, I wanted to just quickly touch on my ongoing experiments with caveman medicine. For those of you just tuning in, I've been playing around with some unconventional practices, rituals, and remedies for cleaning out the anti-creative gunk from my system. And I'm calling those rituals, experiments, remedies, habits, caveman medicines. The idea being that with a freshly, cleaned out cave, inner plumbing, I'll have access and the full benefit of access to my personal infinite innerverse of creative potentiality, which I think exists in every person. It's just about tapping into it. And I'm trying to improve, you know, my access to that wealth. You got to clean out the cave. And I'm learning how to do that I'm not just making this stuff up. I'm learning how to do it by studying the world's best and brightest and oldest. And seeing what they have in common when it comes to habits and mimicking those. And I call them caveman medicines because they're old, much older than any living doctor or shaman or movement or health fad or trend. They outlived all of those things, and history and time has been a sieve. Only the good, the best, have survived. And like things that are old, they are also simple, minimal, and frankly primitive. So caveman medicine seems to be like, you know, a pretty good name. So if you think you want to, you know, or if you think you are stuck creatively and you want to get unstuck, this podcast is a good place to start because I, you know, talk to really inspiring, interesting people, but also maybe try some of my caveman medicines. Keep up with what I'm doing and I'll let you know how well it works for me and maybe it'll work for you, and maybe you are a fellow cave person. That could be fun. We could all be cave people together. The one I just tried, the little habit, ritual, practice, whatever, and you'll know this if you've been following along on my Instagram account, was fasting. Fasting is an incredibly old little habit that we humans have been dabbling in for a long time. About as long as humans have been eating, they have also not been eating on purpose for prolonged periods of time. And I mean, the reasons for that are to get tough, to get enlightened, and to get high. You definitely can reach an altered state of consciousness by not eating. And we humans love doing that. I know a little bit about the science of fasting, but I'm less interested in the science than I am the history, as always. And to a lot of people, fasting's a diet, it's a weight loss thing, and for good reason, because it's really crazy effective at that. Obviously, you're not eating food, but it not only just, like, you know, helps you lose weight by limiting calories as much as they can possibly be limited over a prolonged period of time, but it also resets your appetite. And there's a lot of science there, but boring, distracting, more than anything. It's there. You can go find it. I'm not your source of it. But it does really reset your appetite, which really at the gut of it is kind of the core of our massive widespread health problem. If you want my opinion, it's not what we eat. It's why we eat, the compulsive frequency of our eating habits. We eat way, way too often and way, way too much, in my opinion. But that's another topic that I have lots of opinions on. I could go on about how we obsess about 2,000 calories a day, but that's way too much. We could survive on 2,000 calories a month. But again, my reason for doing it wasn't health as much as it was getting access to the mind-clearing, attitude-resetting aspects of fasting as a meditation and a way to heal. Hippocrates, literally the guy they call the father of medicine, prescribed to his patients more than anything a simple medicine he called not eating. Immediately, at first signs of illness or injury, he would tell people to not eat anymore until they were healed. He claimed that to eat when sick is to feed your illness. Father of medicine, they called that guy. And this was like 4th century BC. And we're just now getting around to taking, you know, the paradigm of the scientific method, applying it to that hypothesis, and finding out that, yes, it's valid. That stuff works. I wasn't necessarily sick or injured, but I did want to be a bit healthier. Mostly emotionally and mentally. If fasting can cure the sniffles, I wonder if it could give me my creative mojo a bit of a boost. Jesus fasted for 40 days. Gandhi fasted to make a point. There's just, you know, there's something there, spiritually, emotionally, and mentally. And I was really curious. I wanted to try it out. So I did. And I did it in a way that was, you know, not particularly precise. I did it very caveman-esque, meaning I didn't have numbers attached. I wasn't, you know, measuring, or I was doing it very minimally, which meant that I was drinking water every day and trying to ingest as much salt as I could physically handle, because that is where your electrolytes are. But that was it. And I didn't really have a time specified, except that I wanted it to be prolonged. And prolonged means basically fasting until the hunger subsides and it gets easy. And then you can fast for an indefinite amount of time until the hunger will eventually come back. And that's when you know your body is saying, I'm done eating your fat storage from your body. You need to start ingesting some real calories now. That was my whole plan. Prolonged fast. Stop eating until hunger subsides. Gets easier. Keep not eating until the hunger returns. But I knew roughly that that's generally 3 days is when fasting gets easier. And I was tentatively shooting for that. It didn't go all the way. I did go a full 3 days. I did not go farther because unexpected travel plans took me to Mexico in the middle of my fast, and it became very hard to navigate the difficult planning and making rational judgment decisions while on the fly, while being incredibly deficient in nutrition and calories. I really was liking it a lot. And the second I broke my fast at the end of the 3 days, I regretted it. I immediately missed it. I wanted to go back. And so I'm going to go back soon. I think, not going to commit here. I haven't planned yet, but I'm thinking Monday might be when I go back. So when you're hearing this episode is probably when I start. But the benefits, unreal. It really did change my appetite. It really did reset my relationship with food. And in a really powerful way. And I could go deeper in that. I'm not going to, but I've had a weird relationship with food. Hypoglycemia, all things growing up. And it's just really restructured how I think about my body. I think about what it needs. I realize how little it needs. and I've stopped pampering it so much by constantly battering it with calories. And my energy was through the roof. And I mean that as a physical energy, but also an emotional energy. My enthusiasm to attack the day, particularly after the fast would concluded, after I broke the fast, my enthusiasm for attacking the day in a meaningful way just shot up. And that's just deep life energy. You know, that's not just, you know, I can successfully meet the demands of a workout energy. This is life energy. It could have also been a number of contributing factors. This was not an experiment conducted in a vacuum. This was an experiment conducted while traveling through Mexico, one of the most beautiful parts of the globe that I've ever seen. That might have been a contributing factor to my life energy. But regardless, I had a really great experience. My creative power has seen a boost. I've taken on projects that have formerly terrified me and approached them with a courage that I'm not accustomed to having. And life has gotten better as a result. I don't want to overhype the effects of fasting, but it's hard not to right now. That's how enthusiastic I am about it. I recommend you look into fasting, fellow cave people, as a way to get unstuck creatively. Fully endorse. We'll talk more about it. I'll probably blog about it. I'll post more about it on my Instagram. There's more coming, but it's good stuff, this fasting stuff. Now let's talk about Malachi. Malachi, somebody that was just recommended to me off the cuff by my previous guest, Nico Dunk. I asked him who the most interesting person he knew in San Francisco was, and he told me Malachi, and he was correct. I went over and met Malachi in actually Oakland, so he's in the Bay, and we sat down. And he told me about a cult that he helped start, organization. So, you know, I don't know if he'd give himself the title of cult leader or cult co-founder or what, but that's how I see him. And I am a enthusiastic disciple at this point. He also is just a practitioner of the weirdest hustles. He buys and sells taxidermy. He has a range of wild animals in his little Oakland apartment and fish bowls hanging from his ceiling with plants growing in them as self-contained ecosystems. And his house is just filled with interesting knickknacks with stories attached and a just dialed aesthetic that I am jealous of. He's also a massive guy that looks like he could kill you and the sweetest person. Just wall-to-wall contradictions and intrigue and interest, and I just loved him from the moment I set eyes on him. I think you'll really enjoy our conversation. Not a conventional creative, but he lives very creatively. And I came away from this conversation incredibly inspired and driven to drink more deeply of my interests and my life and myself and who I am and be it more courageously and fully. Cannot say enough about this conversation. And hope you like it as well. Let's just dive into it. Welcome again to Create Consume. I'm Joe Bowers. Let's get going.
So when other people encounter them, they need to be aware, like, hey, this person's full of shit.
Yeah.
Because she's full of shit.
And be aware. I mean, and then that doesn't necessarily mean the person doesn't need, deserve compassion. It just
they
means
do
that,
the,
like,
they, everyone deserves a certain like amount mm-hmm. of compassion.
But there's also, but like, it, caution.
But yeah, use. Compassion with caution until like proven otherwise. But I feel like in that particular situation that the compassion is like the amount that a person should give to them. It's like eradicated by the, like, the way that they like obviously manipulate the situation.
Yeah.
It's just like, people that like blame their current problems on, which is like a contributor, like, my parents treat me bad. I'm like,
yeah,
well, that is a contributor, but now you're 32. So shut the fuck up and get off. Because they're not treating you bad anymore. The only person that's treating you bad now is yourself.
And that kind of comes back a little bit to what you're telling me about fate hands, I think.
Yeah.
It's just the role that we have in the community is something I've been thinking about a lot.
Yeah.
At least like the little bit that we talked about last time I was here, it's like, it's just been banging around in my head, how much we are a part of a network. But I don't know. I kind of need you to give me that part again. Cause when you told me about it in that bar, what was the bar called again?
The Alley. Yeah.
Alley in Oakland. I don't know. When you said it the first time, it just kind of really resonated with me, but in a way that I wish I was like taking notes, but like, tell me again and we'll just get started here. Like, tell me again what, like, Fate Hands is about.
So when we were at the Alley, we were talking about like the beginnings of Fate Hand, like how like you can contribute initially to Fate's Hand is that like just like the admission that like we are not what we'd like to be, and a lot of people like they put on fronts, like they're like, I'm this and I'm that, and I like, and they try to personify their like their identities through what they do, right, but not by who they are. They're like, I'm an artist, so they do everything to like channel what they want to be an artist. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the things that we like, we attach to the idea of being an artist are things that society attached to being an artist. Like,
right,
this person's got to be like broken. This person's got to be like an alcoholic. This person's got to do psychedelics. This person's got to like live in an abandoned building.
Right.
Like the truth is like you can be a billionaire and have a creative mind, or you can be like a dude that lives in a bush and have a creative mind. And so, but because of like, we are so influenced by the outside world, it's faith. One of the things about Faith Sand is getting back in touch with who we are as people, not identifying by what we do, but by who we are. And like, oftentimes, like, it's hard to admit that you've been tainted or that you're so influenced by not even yourself. You've like altered your personal idea of who you are by considering what other people want you to be in the process of like, of finding out who you are. And I understand that like, that is also a contributor to like how we find out who we are as an individual, but it also like adds layers of fakeness and like subtracts from the reality of like how we interact with one another on a more personal level and on a more realistic level. But what we were talking about is like, and like finding our faults and then dealing with our faults and then, and obviously admitting to them and then trying to fix them. But a lot of people, I mean, including myself, I'm not subtracting myself from the equation of being a fucked up person. Yeah. Because like, but I'm like, I mean, not to toot my own horn, I'm like 70% not fucked up and 30% fucked up.
You've done work on yourself. I mean, I mean, clearly in our conversation, you've taken what you've been given and you've been trying to build on top of that, which is commendable.
Yeah. But I'm also like, willing to step there for the next person that's like trying to use that like that same type of energy to like fix themselves, but not only like fix themselves, be a contributor to the next person helping themselves out.
Right. And that's what really appealed to me. It's just like, yeah, the fact that we fit in a larger group, that we're affected by a larger group, and then we're giving back to that larger group, and kind of the erasure of the individual or deprogramming.
Yeah, the individual is like, is what's wrong with us as a whole. We're like, we're not in a position as a society to focus on the individual right now. Mm. And I mean, honestly, we never have been. And
you mean like society right now needs us to forget the individual?
Yeah, society definitely, yeah, like to fix anything that we have going on with us. And like to like further forget like the issues that we have like within our like immediate circle, because there's people like within the like Faitan community mm-hmm. that do not like one another, or like or are like historically from like previous relationships, previous friendships, like don't like one another. But it's most times because of the lack of consideration due to the next person, because they're more concerned with the individual than the clan.
Right.
So,
well, I mean, even I think a good clan would accept the fact that some people don't like each other and be
yeah.
accept that.
And no, be no, okay some people. Like, I mean, okay, I definitely don't like a few motherfuckers on this planet. But
yeah, and that's just how it goes. Like,
yeah, man. And I can be salty, but for the most part, I'm pretty friendly until I'm given reason to yeah. like. Until you cross my freedom line. You cross my freedom line.
Everybody has boundaries.
Yeah.
You gotta have freedom line though. What is that?
Freedom line is just boundaries. Okay. I just call it freedom line. Cross okay. my freedom line, probably gonna kick you in the ass.
So like people like interfere with your ability to make your own choices or your freedom?
Yeah. I mean, we all have our strengths too. Like I'm one of those people, I grew up, like I said, I grew up in an environment where I can show you better than I can tell you.
Right.
Like, I'm not like a, like I'm only willing to talk to people who are not going to listen for so long, because
I waste time.
I don't. Well, yeah, because I just grew up in an environment where it's dangerous to chat for too long. That's how you get busted in the mouth. So before I get busted in the mouth, I might have to bust somebody else in the
dude,
mouth.
Dude, is that why I talk so much? I just like grew up in too soft a neighborhood.
Maybe
like, no one was punching me for talking to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, I just like I don't. There's a most times there's like very simple solutions for why like. People are angry at one another, or people yeah. don't like one another. And it, going back to, you just have to admit to being wrong. And it's hard to do yeah. that. I'm like, I'm, man, one of my strengths is like, I'm like, if you present an issue with me and I'm wrong, I'm just like, man, I guess I was wrong. I fucked up.
Yeah.
The end. And the other person, you could, it's amazing how the other person reacts. They're like, oh man.
People react really well.
They're like, he just said he was wrong. And yeah. I'm like, Yeah. After that, if you keep flogging a dead horse, that also like leads to other yeah. issues. People are complex, but they're also not complex at all. They're
people.
Simple.
Yeah. Yeah, they're people. I mean, that's anything. I've moved around a lot, seen a lot of different parts of this world, and one thing and different ideologies, different sects, different organizations, tribes.
Everyone's the same.
Followings. I mean, the people are people, and yeah. people are infinitely fascinating. But like, they are just variables of a certain formula. That, yeah.
Yeah, I also think that. Going back to you saying that people are fascinating, I don't think that people are as fascinating as we'd like people to be.
Oh yeah.
This goes back to the like
back to the individual, right?
Back to the individual. Individuals like are like hermit crabs. There's like, you know, that one hermit crab that like it'll see like a piece of dirt that it likes and they'll attach it to its back, and then it'll yeah, see like okay. a leaf and they're like yeah. And before you know it, sometimes they put so much shit on their back that they can't even handle the pressure of all the crap they put on their back.
Really?
And they just like have to like, fuck, I gotta ditch this shell of mm-hmm. all of this stuff and find another one. And then when they leave the shell, then they're vulnerable. They can get picked off by a bird. Sometimes yeah. they make it to the next shell. Hopefully most people make it to the next shell and they realize they don't need to put so much yeah. on the goddamn backs.
Yeah.
But right now we live in like with social media, like
yeah.
showing us like, oh yeah, you got to do this. You got to have feathered eyebrows. You got to have, you know, like you got to listen to Slipknot again. Slipknot was never good in the first place. But these, for some reason on the internet, people are like, yeah, you got to listen to Slipknot again. That's what's like, in. I'm like, no, man, I'm not listening to Slipknot. You're not yeah. tricking me. Yeah. I'm not going to get bamboozled into listening to fucking.
Dude, that is what is pretty clear. Like, refreshing about you, just like even from the first meeting, and this is only really the second time we've talked, but you do seem to have a sense of who you are and what you like, and you're not going to get pushed around by those moving and changing like things that much. At least that's my first impression. Maybe yeah, that's no, accurate no. or not.
I'm pretty set in my ways for the most part when it comes to it. Like I have a list of morals and a list of rules, and I try to abide by them, and sometimes I break them, but you know, like that's for the true. Most part, I try to stay in my own lane.
All right, so let's back up just a little bit. So I love your ideas, but like, let's start basic question here. What exactly is Fate Hands?
It's Fate's Hand.
Fate's Hand.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Fate's Hand is what started off as this group called Young America in Tucson, which was a bunch of, I was in prison in Arizona, and my buddy Boy accidentally made up Faith or Young America.
Okay.
And then it became like this crew that sort of like took over the whole like nightlife and party scene in Tucson. Oh, wow. And then after...
It's just like a gang, like a group?
No, it was just like a group of friends that like... Because we all grew, like, we all had such diverse backgrounds. There was, like, rich kids. There was poor kids that did grow up in gangs, like myself.
Yeah.
And then there was, like, you know, like, white people, brown people. We didn't really have a place. We just, like, we were, like, artists and musicians.
So what connected musicians. You guys?
Was there a I mean, honestly, system? We got connected because we, like, all like to be mischievous. We were, like, the,
okay.
We were just, like, the... We were troublemakers, but like fun troublemakers. Like,
okay.
We like to prank people. Other than like, we weren't like into your like normal. Like the hood kids were not into like normal hood stuff. The rich kids weren't into the preppy shit. We were just like, just there, and we had this like group, and we all looked out for one another. Like we all okay. going back to like this is like came into the where I started realizing like, hey man, we can all contribute it. Like, for example, there was these girls we called the vampires that used to hang out with us.
Okay.
And. We called them that because they had to sneak out at night because we were all young. And they would, like, their family had money. They would bring us groceries and stuff like that. And that's how we ate, was the vampires would, like, feed us.
Okay.
And then, like, me and my buddy Randy that you just met right now,
uh-huh.
we were, like, scrappy. So, like, when kids from, like, because they would come to our neighborhood, it was, like, a rougher neighborhood,
right.
to come hang out. So when people tried to pick on them for, like, being white or small... Randy and I would just beat their asses because okay. that was our lane. We like knew how to scrap.
So you're and like it, the muscle of the group.
I mean, I'm the social person, like I'm the bridge builder. But I mean, at times I've had to be. That's always yeah. been my role. I've been bigger than a lot of my friends.
And, yeah, you're a big dude.
And stronger, and you know, like I just grew up in a rougher environment than a lot of people.
Yeah.
And back then, it was rougher. In Oakland, it's not so much the same. Everyone, like my lane here, is just connecting people.
Yeah,
you know, totally. And that's what I do best. But yeah, from Young America, that's sort of like if people just moved, like a group of us moved to New York, a group of us moved to Portland, a group moved to Austin, Chicago, Los Angeles, mm-hmm. like the mid, like all throughout the Midwest. Some moved to like Norway, and a group of us came out here to the Bay Area, and we like lived, and then people. Fell apart, but the core of the group pretty much remained the same. And a few years ago, we were talking about just like reuniting everyone back together with like what brought us together originally, which was fate. Wow. And like there's like a certain like hints of like astrology. There's like mysticism yeah. in it, but it pretty much like. The theory is like guiding our paths back to one another, guiding mm-hmm. our paths back to not the individual, but back to the community. And so Fate's Hand is just like a testament to like where we are now as adults. And
really? Yeah. And how big is this group?
It's like 900
oh, what?
To like 1,200 people.
Wow.
So it's a lot of people.
Yeah. And I mean, as a background, as far as my curiosity about it goes, for people... that listening, because it's kind of a funny conversation to just drop into, but I was talking to my buddy Nico from the last episode, and I asked him who are some of the most interesting people that you know in the Bay, and because that's kind of how this is going so far, this podcasting. I'm like, meet me interesting people, I ask them to refer me to other people, and it's always interesting where we end up. And he told me about you. He's like, oh, you know what, my buddy Malachi is like one of the most interesting people I've ever met, and he's doing this and this and this. And he was kind of showing me pictures of you, and he showed me some of the like the imagery around Fate's Hand and like the pictures that you're posting. And I'm like, I got to know what this is. Cause just from my background, I'm like just so interested in groups and tribes and how they form and how they capture people. But there was something so mystifying about it. Like I actually just had him stop talking. I'm like, no, I'm going to meet him. I don't even know anything else. I just want to learn it. I want to hear it all from him. And then we went out and had drinks that night, and it was just like, yep, as interesting as I expected it to be, but I still didn't really know what it was. And the fact that it's just like this self-created, I almost want to call it a religion or like a spirituality or...
It's weird.
I mean, there's no divinity.
People were calling it a cult at first.
Yeah, a cult would be perfect.
But it's not really a cult either. It's like, because like we...
Oh, let it be a cult. I want it to be a cult so bad.
Yeah, I know. I mean, there's culty things about it. But there is definitely... it's not a cult. It's really just like we're trying to build... The bigger the Fates Hand community can get, the better. Because like it starts... Like everyone, like I said, everyone has their piece that they can contribute. And not... Fate's Hand is not the same for everyone. Like right. It's, and that's why like one of the things that we do in Fate's Hand is we like allow each person to contribute their piece to like for me, like I wrote a bunch of like pieces for like Fate's Hand. Oh, and yeah. They're sort of like guidelines on like trying to focus on fixing each other. And that's Fate's Hand for me. It's like helping people help people. But Fate's Hand for another person is, you know, like this is where I come to party and get fucked up. And I'm not trying to dictate somebody else's lifestyle.
Right.
Because, like, that's what they do. And for me, that's like, hey, man, I need to go out and do something on Friday night. I'm going to hit up one of my Fates Hands buddies that's into partying and stuff like that. Or yeah. I want to go to a show. Or I need something recorded. Or, like, my homie's in jail, so I got to call my lawyer friend.
Yeah.
You know, like, and that's cool. Like, I mean, there's a few different, like, there's pretty much if you need to reach for something, it's there. You know, like we all are like a tool in a toolbox, and we like we came here to, and that's what we came together to do.
It's almost like a fraternal order. Can I call it that?
Almost, yeah, you can.
It's like the Freemasons, but like with social media.
With social media, but a lot of the stuff that we do is like off social media. So
yeah, I mean, there's not you don't have a huge presence on there at all. Like yeah. I can only see like peaks at what seem to be like a larger thing.
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean. I didn't think it was going to spread so like fast so far, but as soon as I started talking about it and like people were asking me what it was, and then I was explaining it to them like via social media, like and mm-hmm. inboxing people, like some of my friends in the UK were like, yeah, and then like everyone were sending in their pictures like posing with their Fates Hand like canned up, and then a few people got tattoos with like Fates Hand, including myself. I have a giant chest piece.
And what is it?
It's the hand symbol, and it says Fate's Hand on it. Oh, but, yeah, and then a buddy of mine's, Ron West, came out here, and he painted, like, a pretty big mural in the bar that I work at. It's Fate's Hand. So.
Yeah, and so much of it. I mean, everybody wants to belong to something, right? Like, that's where we're all looking for something to belong to. We used to be part of, like, little, tiny, 150 people, small town communities, and we're just not anymore. We're part of something way too big for our psyches. Like we just need to be a part of like smaller tribes and smaller groups, and we're like hungry for that.
Well, yeah, and I mean that's like one of the things that's also damaging, because like it becomes like this somebody else will do it society.
Yeah.
Like and that's totally. That mentality starts off in the homes that these people are like raised in. Mm-hmm. Like they'll like see like the trash can is filled up and they're like, you know,
somebody else's
my job. Brother will get that, or they'll like put a plate in the sink knowing they should wash the plate, and they're like, mom will get that. And right. then that moves on to, like, you'll see somebody on the side of in your neighborhood where you live at getting their head split open because they're getting robbed, and then you're like, somebody's going to call the cops. Right. Like, and then you depend on the police, and we know how fucked up they are.
Yeah.
Like, right. But when you can just be like, hey, leave my neighbor alone. It's like, we all have our responsibilities to one another, but because, like, we're indoctrinated with this, like, somebody else will do it, or somebody else will contribute, or somebody else will handle that. Like, we're, like, fading and failing one another constantly.
And so Fate's Hand, part of that is just, like, having a role.
Yeah, just knowing your role. Because not everyone's going to be, like, if everyone was Michael Jordan, everyone would be dunking basketballs and making $1 billion. Right. And everyone was a doctor, we'd be cutting each other open and healing cancer. But we're not. Some of us are just friendly. Some of us are just there. Some of us can cook burritos good. I'm like, damn, dude, I love you for cooking burritos good. Yeah. And you got to respect that person for what they do the best.
Yeah.
Like, you are bringing light to, like, people that you think are interesting.
Yeah.
And that's, like, that's an important role because it encourages people to keep doing what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it makes them feel like, hey, this might be worth it.
Yeah.
You know, like, and that's a role, and it's an important role.
Yeah, very interesting outlook on that. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think it's tough. I mean, we obviously have like a massive anxiety problem as a culture right now. Everyone's unhappy. Everyone's anxious. And I think part of it comes from that social media comparison of like, you know, it's hard to be who you are because you're comparing who you are with the best of everything else.
Yeah.
Like when I look up at my Instagram feed, I can see the best designers that probably have ever lived. I follow all of them. And the hottest people that maybe have ever lived, the smartest people. And I got to compare myself to all those things. And like having an organization that reminds you like, no, you don't need to be, you don't need Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
And a doctor.
Also, those people on the internet, just
be who you are.
They're front.
Yeah. I mean, they are totally like, front.
The best designers that you'll ever see are probably not on the internet.
Right.
And they probably,
that's true. Like the best designers I know have like 2,000 followers. Nobody follows them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the most best looking people of all time, they're probably not on the internet, like just laying on some bricks. Like how the fuck do these people have enough time to just lay on some bricks? Just like, I'm an influencer. It's like, dude, bitch, you're laying on bricks. You're not influencing anyone. I don't want to lay on some bricks.
Man. Yeah. That's the most annoying thing about the social media age is like, there's some people so hot that that's their job.
Yeah.
To lie on bricks and they get paid good money for
they're
that.
They're like, well, I saw this other one. This girl was laying on bricks in Dubai. Could you lay on this bricks over here? And we'll stay here in Dubai.
Exactly. Man. So like, what do you imagine like the future to be for this organization, this fraternal order, cult? I want it to be a cult.
Well, this is one of the culty aspects of it. I want to take over a town.
Mm. Yes.
So great. I like research like small towns that used to be like affluent.
Yeah.
And one of them is Oil City, Pennsylvania. At one point in time, it was the richest town in America, and the highest point of population was 60,000 people. So, like the Rockefellers lived there.
Oh, no way.
Pennzoil was based out of there. All the major oil companies were like based out of Oil City at one point in time, and then the oil dried up, and the industry failed. And the last big industry there was like an auto parts factory, and they moved it to India, and the population went from 60,000 and it like hovered around 20,000, but in the past like 5 years the population's like dropped below 5,000.
Oh, so it was a boom town.
Yeah, it was a boom town for a long time, and oh. The 60s was the height of its wealth, and it was just like, so there's all this like beautiful architecture there and all of these like beautiful like mansions and beautiful like this downtown like stone cut structures and shit like that. It's awesome looking city, but the population is 5,000 people. And what I would like to do, since the property there, like, I mean, there's houses that are like cheaper than, I mean, on average, I was looking on Zillow,
mm-hmm.
like the most expensive house is like not where you want to be in the town. It's like in the outskirts. So yeah. In the like city limits, the average is like a $60,000 house.
And they're like old Rockefeller houses.
Yeah. Yeah.
Potentially.
Like, yeah. They're beautiful houses.
Damn.
And the cheapest are like $5,000. They're beat. But what I would like to do is find a way to like get investors to give me like maybe like $7 million to buy up a bunch of properties in the town. And then move young artists there, 200 from like, hopefully from the Faith Hands community. By bringing 200 people there, you increase the population by 2%.
Yeah.
And then that's enough to have like a tipping point scale.
Right.
And so you have like, these people are like, hey, like, and you bring these young people there to start their coffee shops, start their bakeries, start their grocery stores, start their, you know, like start their bars. And then they have like social influence in the city. And then take over like the local government.
Yeah.
And then bring people in there. But like,
this is the exact plot of Wild Wild Country, by the way.
I haven't seen that yet.
Okay, you should watch it.
People keep telling me to watch it, but yeah, I just like, I don't like being influenced by like outside things.
Mm-hmm.
But what I want to do is like, I want to make young people homeowners, because like, that's like, we've been like, every time you like read in these like magazines, you're like, it's impossible. Well, we don't own homes anymore. And the millennials are like, they're like, millennials will never own a house because of blah, 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 blah. And that's because they're like, they're reaching for somebody else's idea. They're reaching for New York. They're reaching for Los Angeles. They're reaching for Chicago. They're reaching for Seattle.
Even like the suburbs of all these places.
Yeah. They're reaching for Miami. They're reaching for places that have already been done, came and conquered. Like, we need to start making our own paths.
Ooh, a new frontiersmanship.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and then we need to do it in the skeletons of the places that people have abandoned, that they've forgotten about, and give the people in those cities new hope. But at the same time, give young people new hope in themselves, because we can build our own economies by localizing them. And like, yeah. And I want to do that. And that's why I like started Fate's Hand, is to like really just indoctrinate people to like, hey, give them hope in themselves. Cause like, I'm not doing Tokyo. I'm not doing London. Right. I'm not doing, you know, like I'm not going to Singapore. I'm going to build something where I'm familiar with. And what I'm familiar with is people who have seen like they've seen poverty. I'm familiar with poor, and I want to help those people out. And I think that like young people, if they like stop focusing on coming to like Oakland and or like San Francisco or some places that have already been done, like yeah. you're just walking in somebody else's path. And I'm in Oakland because I'm originally from the Bay Area.
Right.
You know, like I'm from San Francisco originally. I grew up in Tucson, and I like lived in Houston and Chicago. You know, like I've been all over and I've seen the cities, and it's the same fucking rat race. And like, we need to stop moving to these rat race cities, and we need to start building our own economies, building our own communities, and show people that like, show other young people that it can be done. Yeah. And that's what like, I want to build a Fate's Hand community in like a city like Oil City, and like show that we can like tip the economy and tip the like the political scale there, and help people out. And the reason why I want the money to buy the properties there in the first place is like, hey, I want to give these to the people. Like, hey, you earned this. So what you have to do is like, you can live in this place for free, but you have to start a business in this town that's going to help boost the economy. And that's all I want to do. It's just like, help people help people. And my end goal is to like, that's my Fate's Hand vision, but it's completely different than yours.
You know? Maybe. I mean, I just got here.
Yeah, I know. I mean, yeah, it's completely different than a lot of other people's Fate's Hand vision. Like some people's Fate's Hand vision is to be accepted into the community, be able to start their business and live off of that. Like, hey, like I own a home. Like that's it. Like their vision is a little bit more shallow than mine. My vision is to help people expand and then like use this as a blueprint to do this in other places. Because it's like, not only is Oil City an option, there's a million other cities, like not cities, but towns all across America that like need this. Like the people,
old American ghost towns.
Yeah. Not only do we need this as young people, they're like to like install confidence in ourselves that we do have the capability to like change our environments, but for the people in the communities that like you go to.
Yeah.
And also it's important to include those people that are from those communities in the process of this. So you have the support.
That'd be crucial.
Well,
that's what they didn't do in Wild Wild Country, and that's why things went south.
Well, that's what they didn't do in Oakland, because basically all of these tech industries are like more culty than Fate's Hand is.
Yeah,
that's
like,
true. And
everything is a cult.
And then they moved here with like without the intent of including the people that lived here.
No, with a definite attitude that their ideology
is
made the former residents obsolete.
Yeah, I mean, and then they built on top of the community instead of building into it.
Yeah.
And that's the difference between Fate's Hand and what's happening and somebody in the, whatever you said, Wild Wild Country.
Yeah.
Is that like, we're not trying to build on top of the community. We're trying to build into it. And we're trying to give them a format and hopefully like let them become a part of the like Fate's community.
Yeah, I can't get away from the appeal of the build it from scratch, cultish utopia. Like, I mean, it never works. Historically, there's so many examples of people doing it. I can't say it doesn't work, like define success with that. But I mean, everything from, you know, Quakers, Wild Wild Country, the Rajneeshis, Mormonism, like everything. It always kind of starts with that idea. Like we're gonna rebuild society from the ground up in the skeletons of a former society. And we're going to do it right this time. And it's easy to say and historically, retrospectively, that it didn't work, but I mean those things still exist, and there was a level of success. And I mean, I'm so nihilistic at this point, I just get excited about the try. I get excited about the attempts more than anything. I'm like, my basic point is I'm in. I mean, it sounds so fun.
I feel like the issue with these things is because it starts focusing more on the individual,
right?
So like And people start focusing on the individual. Like, I don't want to be focused on. Like, right. Because I'm more proud of the people around me than I am proud of myself.
Right.
You know, like, I'm like cheering on the people around me more than I'm cheering on myself. And I don't want to be cheered on. Like, because I'm a failure until I see the next person win.
Huh. Yeah, that's good leadership.
Like, I don't want to see
something a good cult leader would say.
I'm just saying, I'm not a cult leader. I'm a follower of
Satan. Dude, yeah, I really like the idea. And I mean, I think, I mean, you just got me inspired just with, yeah, the frontiersman attitude that we kind of lost
as a country.
Like, it's our history. It's what makes America what it is. But this generation might be the first generation that really just doesn't.
We don't have
really
a lot of
have possess it like our previous generations have.
Well, and then a lot of because of like the way that society in the last, you know, like since the last recession of the 80s,
mm-hmm.
Like pre-Reagan, the reason why, and that was just a small recession.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was like the 2008 recession, but right. that was really nothing either. You know, like people lost their homes because of like stupid investments because we were getting hustled by like banks and loan companies. But the reason why we like lost it is because we live in a society that's like revolved around comfortability.
Yeah.
And it's just like, and it's furthering down that like spiral of like, well, if I'm not comfortable, then it's not right. Like that's we've been alive for millions of years for fucking reasons. We've made ourselves uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Like, and then, you know, and the reason why we've thrived is because we really made ourselves uncomfortable. Somebody came outside of the cave. There was like people inside the cave. Right. They were eating rats and roaches and they were like, fuck. And somebody's like, I'm tired of eating rats and roaches. I'm going to go make myself uncomfortable and venture outside into the cold. And I'm going to club that fucking giraffe and I'm going to eat that bitch.
Yeah.
And they did it. And then somebody that inspired other people. Like,
I mean, especially in America, like, I mean, people pushing west is like the definition of American. We're on the western edge of that frontier. Like, we're living in the town that was started by guys dressed head to toe in furs from the animals they killed in sub 20 degree weather in the hopes of like finding a better place and maybe like striking gold. Like, no aspect of those guys' lives were comfortable.
Yeah.
It was the exact opposite. They lean into the pain, lean into the unknown and the discomfort. And I think that's in us. We just forgot. Like, I don't think that, like, that genetic pool or that genetic energy that's been infused with, like, many generations of West Coast Americans is gone. I think we just, like, have allowed it to
dissipate.
Yeah, get buried underneath, like, all the comfy, cushy luxuries of the modern person. And, like, we run away from discomfort.
Yeah.
Very quickly.
I don't think that we should. Yeah. I feel like... And I'm not talking about like the discomfort of camping,
no.
Because that's like, you know, you got your goddamn Honda Element parked in the parking lot, and you're gonna hop in that bitch and go back home in 3 days. Like, I want to talk about like real discomfort,
even discomfort of confrontation, or like there's an extreme. I've noticed there's an extreme aversion to confrontation, to the point where people don't even want to have dissenting opinions, or they want to have dissenting opinions, but in tribes of people that agree with them, so they don't have to face. You know, maybe the valid arguments of the opposition.
And that irks me more than anything.
Yeah.
Like, you don't even want me to jump into that
point. I mean,
Because that's my issue with California right now. It's like, I was watching this Chappelle stand-up recently, and he was like, he had this, like, really good line. He's like, the world's becoming bitch-ass niggas. And I was like, that's fucking accurate as fuck.
Yeah.
That's really what it, I mean, to simplify things. That's really what it is. It's like people can't handle shit anymore.
Yeah.
Like, you can't handle a joke. You can't handle like being told about yourself. You can't handle criticism. That's why I hate artists now, like the modern artists. It's because they don't like critique is bad. And like critique makes you better.
Yeah.
And people can't even handle critique of society. Like, hey, this is why other people think this about like you. This is why people start forming stereotypes about the groups of people, is because they like can't do this and they can't do that.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, for example, I grew up in a rough neighborhood. I mentioned this a couple of times before, and people got robbed down there. Mm-hmm. So when we would walk around, and even though we weren't the ones robbing people, we would see people and are like, people would be like, oh yeah, you're from that neighborhood, blah, blah, blah. Or the cops were racist, or you robbing people, which is wrong to get racially profiled for robbing somebody. Right. But if motherfuckers in my neighborhood weren't robbing motherfuckers all the time, then when we stepped out of our neighborhood, we wouldn't get harassed for robbing people.
Right. Exactly.
It's just like if I stick my hand in fire, I know it's going to be hot.
Right.
So I'm not going to stick my hand in fire again.
Right.
Or I see fire, I'm not going to assume that it's cool fire.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, I'm not going to get burned this time.
Well, let's take a couple steps back to an arena I'm more comfortable with. And that's critiquing an artist. I think there's definitely truth. The interesting thing I see is our generation and their treatment of haters.
Yeah.
And
my God.
That haters going to hate. And that's true. There's always going to be people critiquing. But there's also other ways of interacting with these people that are critiquing you other than fully, totally dismissing them wholesale and not listening to anything. Because the thing about haters is sometimes they make good points.
Yeah.
And if you weren't so precious and sensitive to the haters and you could actually engage with them with a level of, it's not even thick skin. It's just realizing that some have good things to say, some don't. And kind of being at peace with that, your audience can be the source of the best feedback that you'll ever get access to. And if you just dismiss them, people either like me or they don't and fuck them, you're missing a profound opportunity to learn. And that hypersensitivity, so you can't even get coached by the people that pay attention to you, is a problem.
Yeah. I mean, if you're on somebody's radar, that means that they're there for you.
Right.
Or they're not there for you.
I mean, maybe they're totally just in bad faith antagonizers, and they're just angry and they're looking for people to make feel bad on the internet anonymously without consequences. Those people exist. Obviously, we know they exist.
Yeah.
But there's just a weird relationship that where people just want to be who they want to be, and they want to have zero accountability for that, and they resent any accountability for that. And there's truth and there's falsity. I think you should just be celebrate who you are and not worry too much about what people think. But also there's benefit to people to feedback. And I think that the most zen place you can be is being able to I don't know, you can have a healthy relationship with that feedback loop with an audience. And we've lost it a little bit. I think that's what kind of refined early days hip hop is, those audiences booing people off the stage if they couldn't put up. And it's just like, we're missing that a little bit our detriment right now.
I just was at a critique for an art thing in San Francisco not too long ago at SFAI, and I heard this this guy made a point, and it was not good art. It was bad art.
Yeah.
But he was being pretty nice about it, how bad it was. It was just not good.
Yeah.
And he was like, this is this, and he's like, and I've seen this before, and I understand what you're going for. He's like, but you're falling short, because you're doing this style of art, and he mentioned the style of art. I can't remember what it was.
Right.
He's like, we know what you're going for, but you're just not getting there yet. You're not hitting it yet. And her response to that was this is a critique class too.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sitting there with my friend who invited me to this critique class, and she's sitting next to me, and then her friend who was getting criticized or critiqued for her for falling short in what she was trying to accomplish was the most painful response to this dude who was being pretty nice about for how bad this art was, well, she basically told him because he was a dude that his opinion didn't matter.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm it's not about, in this situation, it's men trying to press their ideas upon you. But in this situation, you're in a critique class, and he was the only one that was ballsy enough to sort of stand up and say, hey, this is not good. But at least he said it in a really nice way.
Right.
If that was me, I would have been yo, man, this is trash.
Yeah.
It's not good.
You're right. People are willing to consider your art or the work that you're doing enough to establish an opinion on it. I don't think people realize how valuable that is and how kind and
But that should only want to make you better.
Yeah, totally. I mean, and this is something I actually encounter a lot. I get asked a lot to critique people, to give feedback. And one thing I've definitely noticed with my own self is that when I have the most to say, when people's work is the best. It's almost confusing. When someone shows me something really good, I have a lot of critique because I can work with it. It's I can't make bricks without clay here. And if they give me something good, then I have a lot to say. And it might sound I'm really going hard and ripping this apart, but it's because there's so much to build off of. And if somebody shows me something really poor, like a sketch that just has you know, no understanding of human anatomy, and just clearly, like, I don't know what to do with it. Like, I can't say much other than, yeah, you know what? And like, almost ironically, all I can say is what sounds really nice is like, you know what? Keep working. You're making progress. Keep going. Like, all I can do to people's work who's bad is just give gentle encouragement.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important to understand. If somebody has a lot to say in detail, fine advice, take it as a compliment. It means that you're bringing good things to build off of. If somebody's like, oh, you're doing great, just keep going. Maybe your work is shit.
Yeah. Well, I feel like there's a lot of people in the art world right now. Their art, it's a hobby. It's right. Not a career.
Yeah.
And that's like, I mean, it's like you were in design for that's what you still do.
Right.
And like some people who are in the world of design, they end up, you know, like doing graphic design for nothing, you know, mm-hmm. like they're freelance artists for the rest of their life. Not saying that they're bad at it. They're right. good enough to like get work and eat a sandwich here and there.
Yeah.
But then it's not, I mean,
reinventing the wheel.
Yeah. They're not reinventing the wheel. They're not, you know, like the creative minds behind like some of the greatest companies on earth. And they got to live with that. And I got to going back to like, I got to know my lane. Like,
yeah.
Like, I got to know my lane, but so do other people.
Yeah.
And there's a lot, it happens in politics. There's people in politics that are like, are in positions that they shouldn't be in.
Right.
And they just need to know their lane. They're like, dude, maybe they shouldn't be there.
That's my 2019 thing. My 2019 thing keeps changing, but alignment and clarity, like aligning who I am with what I want to be. Cause that's, I mean, I think that's a lot of people's problems. They want to be something they ain't. Like,
I mean, it's true.
Cool Running style, you know, like, remember Cool Runnings?
Yeah.
Like, the whole, I love the moral of that movie, but the whole time the main guy, the captain of the team, is trying to get them to be the mirror and copy of the Swiss bobsledding team. And it's not until they just try to be, you know, actually Jamaican and be Jamaican in the way they do things that, you know.
That the flow really comes.
Yeah, and then they reach, and that, like, that's everything now, like. Again, coming back to the social media problem, it's like you see all the best of all these things, and there's just a strong pull to be them, to be what you see on social media, the best versions of each, the ones that are getting the most attention, the most money, or whatever. And it's the hardest thing. It's like it requires an incredible amount of self-awareness and discipline to be like, no, I'm not going to try to be those people. I'm going to try to be me. And that's a lifetime pursuit. It's hard to know what your lane is, but I think that's the only path to happiness.
Well, it's just with social media. If
happiness is possible.
Makes it like, for me, and it should for a lot of people, make it easier not to want to do those things. It's because like,
yeah,
people, it's like, it's gotten to the point where like you see somebody walking down the street and you're like, and you can literally just like, that person likes this, 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 and this just by the way that they look. And it's like, you're not even making fun of them anymore. It's like facts. Like you can... Like, I was at this bar, and I saw this guy who had black-rimmed glasses, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know what's going to come after that. Or I was at this bar, and I saw this guy who had a black leather jacket, so on and so on. Or I saw a white dude in the cowboy hat, and it wasn't – and we were in San Francisco.
So it's an ironic cowboy hat.
Yeah, it's not even really an ironic cowboy hat. It's like that Graham Parsons, like, trickle down.
Oh, gotcha.
Like, and you're like – I get it. You found yourself in the desert when you did a bunch of peyote with your pasty ass friend. Like, but you didn't really find yourself in the desert because you just
joined another tribe.
Yeah, you just joined another tribe. Now you like Joshua Tree a lot. Like, and I'm just like, you shouldn't be able to like look at somebody and be like, you go to Joshua Tree or like you're on your way to the Nevada City.
Well, why not?
Well, because I mean, I know we all have tribal markers, right? And that's like a great thing with like we know our clans, but I don't want to be that predictable.
Right.
Like, I don't want to be so predictable, like, where somebody, like, knows what they know I want avocado toast. Like, look, I work at a coffee shop, but
let me guess, avocado toast.
Yeah. I don't even have to say that. I just look back to the kitchen. I was like, hey, you guys want to smear some avocado on toast? There's some people coming in. Or I'm like, sometimes people come up, I've never seen them before in my whole entire life, but just by, like, the way that they look, they have, like, not a beard, but like stubble, and they got like a blue, like a light blue shirt on, and the like top buttons on. I already have a cold brew waiting for them. Yeah. Like, I already know that guy wants a cold brew. I was like, cold brew? He's like, how'd you know? You read my mind. It's like, no, you told me just by the way you look.
Just the way you look. Yeah, it is kind of funny. Like, you remember the movie Warriors?
Yeah,
like the 80s movie where there's just a bunch of gangs that are dressed up like a tight, like there's clowns, there's like baseball bikers, guys, there's the baseball guys, and it's just a group of like almost cartoonishly dressed up like caricatures of certain tribes, and they're all gangs and they all fight each other. And that's kind of what it feels like walking down the streets of San Francisco. It's just like everyone's dressed up.
But it's not like
a team.
But it's like no one's fighting for anything.
Yeah.
But the only thing they're fighting for is to be like more relevant.
Attention.
And yeah, I know.
Fighting for attention.
Yeah. And it's like, but you're never going to be relevant if you're doing the same exact thing as the next person.
Yeah.
It's just like, this. I feel like this is like one of the
And that can't possibly be who you are, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and that's the thing is like we're all too, at our core, too nuanced, too unique to like match each other that closely. And I think that's probably what...
That's bothering about
it. It doesn't feel authentic to who that person is that you look like so many other people on your team. Like there's nothing wrong with being a part of a tribe. In fact, it's something probably pretty cool about it, being part of a tribe, cult, whatever. But if it's too aligned to that group, then you're missing some alignment to yourself.
Well, yeah,
and that alignment to yourself is most important. Yeah,
you're not in your lane if you're not living your true life.
Yeah,
like and there's. That's the hermit crab thing. It's like these people are putting stuff on their shells. Yeah. It doesn't need to be there. Like, you don't need to look like the dude. You don't need to look like... I don't need to see six of you in a bar when I go. I don't need to see... I don't need to walk down the street and see several of you. Like, I don't want to, like... I don't want that to be my, like, my marker to, like, this person might be cool.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want, like...
Dude, but it's, like, it's hard, too. Like, I'm you know, I'm in my 30s, and it's still hard to know who I am. You know, I think it's a tough thing. It's a tough thing, but
to a certain extent, but like we are resilient. We are innovators. We're creative. We've traveled across the world. We've fucked a bunch of things.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
We've eaten all kinds of stuff that we weren't supposed to. We knew we all know a guy that died from doing something that he wasn't supposed to do.
Right.
We all know somebody who like lived from something they weren't supposed to do. And those make the great stories. They make the great moments. They make markers in history. They make markers in our own personal histories, our own personal lives. But if we all start doing the same exact thing and regurgitating like all of the same acts, all of the same information, like what the fuck are we doing here?
Right.
Like, all we're doing is just, like, swimming in a cesspool at that point.
Dude, you're such a creative. I mean, that's the impulse of every creative that I've met. And the difference between people creative and not is that impulse to fix and make meaning from doing something different. And I that impulse is so strong in you. It's really, really interesting. But, yeah, I mean, I think one of my takeaways from this conversation is that I suddenly feel so motivated to, like, encourage people, and maybe that's all people need is the encouragement to be them, and like just keep preaching that from the hills. Like, be you, whatever you are.
Yeah, be you.
Is worthwhile. Find your lane. Like, trust me, you're gonna be happier. And like, and there's nothing wrong with being a juggalo, or being into Supreme and being a hype beast, or being a beardy McGlasses guy from Portland. But like,
only if that's you.
But yeah, but that and what else? What else is you? Yeah. What else makes you the thing that stands out from everybody else in your tribe? Find that, celebrate it, and like be stoked about it. And it's hard. That's hard. I mean, I know it's a lifelong thing, but like, it doesn't hurt to keep going for it. And it probably also doesn't hurt to have somebody keep telling you that that's okay. Like, be Jamaican. Don't try to be the Swiss. Be Jamaican.
Yeah, but don't be Jamaican.
But don't be Jamaican unless you're Jamaican. Find out what it is that you are and be that.
Yeah, somebody's going to hear that and try to be Jamaican.
Yeah,
that's
I mean, not probably supposed
to be Jamaican.
I only know one Jamaican, and yeah, let him do that. Spencer Nugent, shout out, man.
I don't want to. I've seen the guys that try to be Jamaican that are not Jamaican.
All the Rasta guys?
Yeah, I knew this white Jewish kid when I was growing up, and he tried to be Jamaican.
He was trying to be Rasta?
Yeah, he had a whole little clan.
Oh, no.
And they're the type of, like, white people that say Brazil and and Cuba. And I'm just like, come on, man. Just let things be. Just let things be.
That's what I really hope. I always thought I knew who I was, and I thought I had good alignment, but 2018 was a year of me figuring out that I did not know. Like, there's still a lot of development to do to get alignment. And I think some of the best ways that I found, like, actually, I lived in Australia for a couple of years, almost 3 years. And I didn't realize, actually, we talked about this last time, but I didn't realize how American I was until I lived in Australia. And all my homies from Australia will probably be laughing when they hear that, because it was incredibly obvious to them what was not obvious to me. When I was in America, I felt like set apart from like all these Americans, and you know, I felt so unique and different. But man, when you go far from home and far from who you are, it really does teach you a little bit who you are when you find out who you're not. Sometimes it's just that alignment is just like process of elimination. I'm like, oh well, I just listened to a full album of Insane Clown Posse and hung out with some juggalos. I am not one of them. Cool. Yeah. That's like cool. I can tick that off the box. Like, no disrespect. To them,
I like how you keep reverting back.
I keep going back to the juggalos.
Juggalos are weird.
Man, I grew up like first half of my life in St. Louis. A lot of those people are juggalo fans now, but a lot of the kids I hung out with in elementary school. But yeah, now I know. I'm not one of those. I'm not also a bass fisherman, also from St. Louis. And there's nothing wrong. I mean, that's like something to be celebrated. Like, oh, cool. I know who I'm not. No disrespect to them at all. I love who they are. But I'm just one more step closer to finding out
who you are,
who I am. And that's why it's so important to get out of your comfort zone, go on frontier, go hike into a tribe and interact and become friends with a tribe that might be outside of your comfort zone. You might find there's aspects of that you really love. And there's aspects of that do not appeal to you at all.
I don't feel like there's very many tribes. Like, as long as your tribe is sane.
Yeah.
It's like,
and doing good things.
Yeah. And doing good things.
There's a lot.
Nothing should be outside of your comfort zone.
Right.
Like, the only way you should feel outside of your comfort zone in a new community is if it's not because of them.
Right. You know? It's you.
It's you.
And there's nothing, I mean, I don't want to say there's anything wrong with having a comfort zone. Everybody has different size comfort zones.
You don't have to partake in any other tribe's rituals besides your own.
Right.
But while there, you got to respect what they're doing.
Right.
And that's it. That's all it takes. Exposure. It's like, hey, man, it's like, I know people who are tweakers in Arizona. I don't smoke meth. I never have.
Right.
Never will. But I got some good ass homies that are tweakers.
Yeah, totally.
And I respect them in their community. I'm just like, yo, man, you guys smoke meth? And they're like, that's my dude that doesn't smoke meth, guys. And then everyone asks, is like, hey, you a cop? I'm like, no, I'm not a cop.
I'm clearly not a cop. Has anybody thought you were a cop?
Oh my God. Many times.
I would never.
I would tell you a story about how people thought that I was a cop one time, but
I want to hear it.
It would involve, I'll tell you, not on a recording.
Not on a microphone. Man, I got to figure out. I get so much good stuff off the record.
Yeah.
Oh man. But yeah, I mean, I think it goes back to, I don't know, it was probably Mark Twain who said something about like travel is the antidote to bigotry and to closed-mindedness and everything else. Like, it's not just travel. It is. I mean, you can travel in your own hometown. Like, if you're not a nerd, if you don't go to Comic-Con, if you don't play D&D with people on the weekends, go find somebody that does. Go hang out with them. I mean, trust me, it's going to be an interesting experience and you're going to like it. And you're going to find out whether or not that resonates with you or it does. If you're a designer, go hang out with some accountants. If you're an accountant, go hang out with some designers. Like, I think that really is just what we need. We need to mix this pot.
I feel like it should go further than that. I feel like if you're an accountant, go to like the hood and kick it with some people that just like, or, and if you're from the hood, go to like some place where like people that are in the financial world hangs out. Cause you can all learn from something, from one another.
Yeah.
Like, that's what when I was younger, me and my friends, I was fortunately enough to be like smarter than a lot of people I grew up with. And I'm not like I'm not tooting my own horn.
No, you just hung out with a lot of dumbasses.
I hung out with a lot of dumbass people that did a bunch of stupid ass shit.
Yeah. Gotcha.
And I was like, I was a hoodlum, you know, like I grew up being a hoodlum. It was the culture. I was like, but my friends would be like, oh, I'm going to go steal some like Jordans. Mm-hmm. And you know, like, I was like, that's what they're expecting you to steal. You know what I'm going to go steal? A fucking suit. And you know what I'm going to do with that suit? I'm going to get in all these rich people's parties and drink and eat food. Because we don't have fucking food. We are poor. You're not going to get into the party with Jordans and a basketball jersey. Right. I'm going to get in that party with this fucking suit. And I'm going to eat the fuck out of some food.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. And you know what happened? I was like, I mean, this is sort of like, I don't even, it's 2019. You probably can't say a lot of shit. Like, what? I fucked my way out of the ghetto. Like, really? I read a million motherfucking books. Mm-hmm. I taught myself how to fucking talk. Like, the people that, like, weren't from my neighborhood learned to talk. I'm not going to say, like, I taught myself how to be articulate.
Right.
Like, I didn't teach, like, my homies were like, you taught yourself how to be white. And I was like, no, I taught myself how to get educated because I, like, needed to.
Yeah.
Because I knew that was the only, my parents were poor as fuck. Like, my stepdad was a fucking alcoholic. My mom didn't give a fuck about us. And mm-hmm. everyone around us was killing each other.
Yeah.
And selling fucking drugs. And I was like, that's not my life.
Right.
Like, I was in and out of juvenile prison. And after I got out of juvenile prison, I had to go to adult prison for some shit I did when I was 15.
No.
You know, like, and so I'm like, I was done with that shit. I was like, yo. Yeah. And I was like, if I got to commit some crimes, they're going to lead me to a better way. I hustled the fuck out of my way out of the hood. And I didn't want to sell drugs by doing it. But I once fucked somebody for a plate of bland-ass spaghetti because I was so fucking hungry. No I like way. I was like, oh, I'm gonna, this woman is sort of hot. She's 42. I'm fucking 18. I'm going to fuck this person for some spaghetti because I'm hungry. She invited me over for spaghetti. I was like, I'm hungry. Like,
wow.
Because we didn't have fucking groceries. We were poor. Like, wow. No one in our neighborhood was hiring us. They knew we were the hoodlums.
Right.
But me, being slightly smarter than my friends, I was like, I'm going to steal some nice clothes. And I'm going to mingle with all these rich people. And I'm going to find out what they do. And then I'm going to find out how to, like, how to start businesses. I'm going to find out how to hustle. I'm going to find out what they do. And I don't, like, I have to educate myself vicariously. I'm going to start hanging out on the college campus.
Damn.
And reading all these stupid-ass books. And, like, I was like, I'm going to fuck rich people.
You know, like, talk about working smarter, not harder, man.
Yeah, man. And that's literally how I got, like, I was just like, I'm going to fuck this rich person and stay in their house for a while. And fucking learn stuff. I'm going to read their books. Like, that's literally what I did.
Dude, that's awesome.
I mean, that's, and then when I'd hear them say something, I'd like listen to their conversations. Like, what are they talking about? I'm going to learn about that.
And I mean, it's not even smarter. It's just different.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was no way I was going to go to college. There's no way I was going to, I graduated high school early for no good fucking reason.
Mm.
Like, but just to get overlooked because I was like, I mean, to everyone else, I just looked like a criminal. Mm. I beat the crap out of people all the time. Mm. Me and my buddies were always busting out windows because we thought the shit was funny. Like, we were just, like, mischievous more than we were, like, wanting to get involved in the life of crimes. But slowly but surely, like, one by one, somebody would get locked up for life. Somebody would be like, yo, man, I'm tired of being poor and try to do home invasions. Somebody would be like, I'm going to start selling crack. Somebody's like, I'm going to rob some motherfuckers, get shot, get locked up, get, you know, and then me, I was just like, dude, I'm going to steal a suit. I'm going to steal some nice shoes. I'm going to get a bike. Man. I'm going to spend my last like $20 on a haircut and I'm going to start fucking rich people.
Dude, there's a life lesson there. I don't know what it is. I'm going to have to sit on that for a while and get to it. But I mean, you definitely practice with your preach. Like my first impression of you, I mean, going back to like not being able to like look at somebody and be like, oh, they want avocado toast. Like, I wouldn't know what to serve you at a bar. I mean, you're instantly enigmatic, like just a mix of influences and a mix of like things that you've got going on. And that, I mean, that extends to your house too. I mean, I always record the intro after I do the whole episode. Cause I never know what the episode's going to be about until we're done talking. But I mean, I got to describe your house and I'm going to post a bunch of pictures of your place. Cause it's like, it's dope. But you have a bunch of dead animals. Clearly like animals.
I do like animals, dead and alive.
Dead and alive, yeah, because you got living and dead animals up in here. You have flower pots hanging from the ceiling, and it took me a long time. You had to point it out to realize that the flower pots actually have living fish swimming around in the flower pots, like hanging from the sky. And, yeah, you got snakes in the corner. And, yeah, all these old-timey medicine bottles.
I've never had like a shot or anything like that.
You've never been given a shot, like
not like I've never been vaccinated.
Wow.
And I've only done like herbal medicine like my whole life. So that's what like that big ass cabinet is in there. It's just like all like herbal medicine and like
total shit. You tell me you don't like Joshua Tree?
Nah, man, I'm not gonna go down there. I've seen too many people with cowboy hats to found myself in the desert, too.
The cowboy hat guys have ruined it.
I'm not gonna try to have somebody tell me to listen to Stevie Nicks. Like, I like Stevie Nicks, but I'm not trying to be like,
oh, get wooed by your... Dude, I want to see it. I mean, that's the thing. I hear what you're saying, but I'm like... I've just gotten to this point in my life where I'm like not turning down anything. You know, like, I've been insular. I've been on my own thing. Like, I was so like musically snobby in like high school and college, and like shut down everybody's taste. And I just put so much work to setting myself apart from what other people were. I'm just at the stage of my life where I don't even care. You're into Pokemon Go. You're into, I mean, Republicans, Democrats. I'm curious what you got.
Yeah, no, aside the
fact. I'll go to Joshua Tree. I'll go to Burning Man. I'll do all this
you're
stuff.
You're a special type of person, though. Like, I'm
a special stage. Don't get me wrong. I'll be snobby again.
Yeah. Well, I mean, once you find out you don't like that much salt in your chips,
yeah,
you'll figure it out.
Yeah.
But
I'm just in an open place in life right now.
Yeah, no, I've been there, too. Like I've been there, like, and I'm still very open to, like, to be presented with ideas, but I'm not like open to like venture out to them anymore. Right. So I've already done all the venturing that I want to do, and I know what I like, and I know like, and I know what I can learn to like.
Yeah.
But I'm also not like, I know for a fact when you said like Pokemon Go, yeah. Like I know for a fact that I don't like looking at grown ass men on scooters looking for Pokemon. I mean, like maybe when it first like started and I was like, yeah, I can see how somebody would be interested in it. But like,
I loved it. I mean, for that moment, it was so cool to see like everybody get fired up about it. Like moms, dads,
kids,
hipsters, hippies,
yeah,
business guys, tech bros, like everybody was into it. It was like such a, we are the world, like let's hold our hands and play a game together kind of moment.
Yeah, I saw this tweet that said that was the closest that we've ever come to world peace.
Yeah, it seriously was.
It really was, man. I wasn't for Pokemon Go, but right. I was for world peace. I was for people like I wasn't even hating. I was just like, yo, man. I was like, if this big ass dude's getting up out of his house, and I know that fool hasn't left his house in weeks, that fool should have been sitting up there masturbating and playing video games for the days. But he's walking around right now
with a backpack,
and friends, full of Mountain Dew and some chips. But still, like, if that big ass dude's out there walking,
if it's motivating.
That person to be out there.
Yeah.
But also then people started dying. Yeah, and then black people started getting chased for playing Pokemon Go.
Yeah, that's just, I mean, the world's going to be the world. Yeah. And that's never going to change. Progress is an illusion. The evil just shifts. Progress just shifts. It's just moving the chips around. But it's all the same. But for that brief moment, man, that was fun. I had so many interesting conversations. Because I was out there. Like kind of playing, but also kind of just being the Jane Goodall of like the societal shifts that were happening, and just being like, I gotta watch this, man.
I hope something like that happens again, man. Yeah. But like for like, oh, with some more like, with a like a deeper content, like something like that, like where we are all. I hope we get invaded by some fucking aliens or something.
Yeah,
like
and then we
that.
All so, join up.
Yeah, yeah, we're like, you know what? We gotta beat these aliens.
Like we talked about that with a. Americans after 9/11, how every American was American, we all loved each other universally and everything else. Like it's gonna take like
unless
a global...
you're Arabic.
Yeah, unless you're, but even then there was, I mean, I remember my neighborhood in LA, we were like, there was even that reverb of being like, well, you're Arabic but you're one of us, and like, and they were all, I mean, even that was overlooked at least at first.
Yeah,
it was only later.
This is like, that's like the first week of Pokemon Go.
Yeah, exactly. It was
like everyone
the first week
was together and they're like, hold on, that guy's sort of a little bit browner than me.
Yeah, and then things started splitting up and things, but it's going to need like, we're going to need like a global 9/11, like aliens to like nuke Antarctica, and then we'll all join up and that will be like world peace for at least a week.
Yeah.
And that'll be a great experience before we get, you know, blown to shit by those same aliens, but it'll be a beautiful moment.
Yeah, I mean, at least we're all dying together.
Yeah, I hope it does. I mean, wouldn't it be great if we could have that experience without that?
Yeah.
But we can't. I'm a realist, man.
Yeah, aliens would probably fuck us up.
But maybe to bring it back, Fate's Hand is the catalyst for that world peace moment.
Oh, hope.
Without aliens.
I can only hope to have that much impact on the planet. But you know what? I'm content with having the impact on my immediate community.
Yeah.
Like, I'm content with that. We should that's be like, we all that. Should be content with what we're good at.
Yeah.
And that's like one of the other things. Everyone's trying to be like, they're trying to lay on bricks on the internet. And I'm not trying to lay on bricks. I'm trying to
like, lay on bricks on the internet. Like, what?
Laying on bricks, I feel, is like the new, like, mirror selfie.
Really?
Yeah, man. I keep seeing people laying on bricks.
Dude, I do not know what you're talking about, but I know
you're gonna
for
notice
a fact
that
I'm going to notice it every time I go on Instagram now.
You're going to see some, like, hot chick and booty shorts laying on bricks.
I mean, I'm down.
I mean, I'm cool, like for, a... I'm cool for booty shorts. And I'm
and
cool.
Then hot chicks.
Or it's going to be like some dude like laying on bricks with his fist on his chin.
Okay, that's what's going to be. We're going to go outside right now and like lay you down on some bricks and take a picture. And that's going to be the thumbnail for this episode, podcast episode.
I'm not laying on bricks.
Got to get you. You're going to do it. You haven't been convinced yet, but you also don't know how persuasive I can be.
I'm not laying on any brick.
Yeah, we'll see. No, I'm just all I'm saying. We'll see.
I've never drank LaCroix.
What?
Not a sip.
Wow.
I made it the point.
Yeah, you clearly
I don't watch Wes Anderson movies.
What?
No. Nah,
I mean, I get that. I mean, kind of.
I don't trust things that white people like that much. I don't watch Coen Brothers
but
movies.
But see, that's the problem. Okay, let me argue. Like, we've been aligned for most of this conversation. Let me argue against that attitude just a little bit, because I think that tribal mentality allows you to eliminate some things that actually have true merit. Like, the thing is about these tribes that, like, get so obsessed. And, like, don't get me wrong, I totally know how Wes Anderson fandom is obnoxious as shit. I totally 100% on board with that. But also, you know, there's a reason that fandom was created, because there's got to be something true there.
Yeah, yeah.
And until you experience that, you don't like know. But like, that's like being really comfortable with your own self. Actually, I can't even argue this. I'm already doubting myself as I argue this, because something that is so appealing about you is you know what you like and you're done with that, and you're like, and it's almost your lack of curiosity about other people's things that it is appealing and enviable. Like the fact that I am like, no, I want to go look, I want to watch Wes Anderson movies, see what all the hype is about, is what makes me like kind of be blown around like by every wind of trend or influence or like every shiny object, I go after it. I mean, maybe I shouldn't be trying to convince you.
Yeah, that's not something I want to attach to my shell.
You don't want to go after every shiny object. There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, fine. No, I'm not convincing you. Don't watch any Wes Anderson movies.
I'm not ever.
I mean, they're good.
I didn't watch Little Miss Sunshine, and I even heard that one was good.
I mean, yeah, you heard all these were good.
No, I didn't hear all of them were good.
Yeah. I mean, I like Wes Anderson for most
part. I mean, I knew that already.
Yeah, I because I'm beardy.
I was going to say, you're a white dude with a beard.
I'm a white dude with a beard, and I wear like a Sherpa trucker jacket. Yeah, I get that. I get that I look like a certain thing. That's why I had to leave Portland.
Yeah.
I had to leave Portland because I looked like too much of everybody else there.
In Portland. They all have Wes Anderson up there.
That's true. I can't go to Portland.
Portland is a Wes Anderson movie.
Yeah, it's there's all kinds, but mostly one kind. That's true. Yeah.
I stopped listening to my friend's band one time because it was like, you know what? And I like him as a person.
But?
The Following. I was just like.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I get that. The Following always makes things so hard. So hard.
Yeah. But then sometimes I'm just like, you know what? I like what I like.
Yeah. But
there's things like I like what I like and then I don't like what I don't like. I just don't like the energies around things. Like if I see too many like types of energies that I don't like revolving around something, I'm just like, you know, I can deal with one or two. I'm just like, nah, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm not doing that.
You're making some compelling arguments. You're making me doubt myself a little bit. No, but I'm not going to doubt myself because I know my lane. My lane right now is curiosity.
Yeah,
yours might be focus. Mine's curiosity, and that's okay.
Yeah.
We figured it out.
I mean, Dad, you gotta stick your hands in some jars that you maybe should not be sticking your hands
in. Yeah, find out. But nope, that's not for me.
That's not for you. You're like, fuck, there's a snake in that one.
You know what? I kind of thought that that was the difference between journalists and artists. Is journalists have to be infinitely curious and artists have to be hyper focused. Maybe that's why I sound confused, because I definitely straddle the line of both. Like, I'm this creator, but I'm also doing this podcast. And I'm like trying to have my own authorship and my own voice while also being open and investigating everybody else's. Maybe that's why it's hard to align. Maybe I got to quit one to be able to do the other.
Don't, man, because that's your lanes.
Well, maybe one is my lane.
No, they're
maybe
both that's what your lanes.
Maybe you think they both could be my lane?
Yeah, no, I think that you really can. Like, I feel like people, they, this is one of the good things about like knowing your lane. Sometimes you have multiple lanes available to you.
Okay.
That's like Bo Jackson.
Yeah, a lot of lanes. I
mean, imagine if Bo Jackson was just like, I'm going to just play football.
And that's
He's an amazing football player, but he was also an amazing baseball player.
He would have been forgotten forever.
Yeah, he would have been. Well, yeah, he would have just been known as like a really good football player.
That's true.
Like,
he would not have been forgotten forever. But but not as remarkable as the fact that he is like one of the great multi-athletes of all time.
Of all time.
Great multi-laner of all time.
I mean, and that's just like from an athletic sense. You know, like, and you have like LeBron James. I hate LeBron James. LeBron James more than probably anyone on the planet. But I love everything LeBron James does.
Oh, wow.
And he He's a great basketball player, not Michael Jordan great, but great. But he does the school thing. He's got his businesses. Yeah. He's like an advocate for like all kinds of these activist groups.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's multiple lanes. And it's like, and one of the reasons why he's able to have that many lanes is because he has like access to like so much like wealth.
Yeah.
But
he has resources.
Yeah, sure. He has resources. But still, he's a multi-lane person, and I appreciate that. You have,
maybe multi-lane.
You're not maybe multi-lane. You are, because like, right. you recognize that about yourself. You recognize that you have the ability to do both. It's like one of the things that my brother, he's like a person that does. He's in like a band.
Mm-hmm.
He boxes. He paints, yeah. And he's good at all of them. But he's not great at all of them.
Right.
And I'm just like, yo, man. But when he first moved out here, he was playing the bass. And he was all like, yeah, I'm going to be in this band. And I heard his first show out here. And he was terrible. And I was like, yo, man. I was like, if you're going to do this, you got to be good at it. You can't half-ass it. If you're doing something, just don't do something for the sake of fucking doing it. Do it. And that's what boxing. He was like he was a good fighter because he grew up fighting, you know. But now he's like, he's like working himself into being a great boxer because he's like putting in the work and he's putting in all of the stuff. And I was like, pussy, I was on his ass about like, hey man, I was like, if you're doing something, don't do something just to do it.
Yeah.
Do it. Like, don't go over there and get punched in the head. Like, refine what you're doing.
Right.
Make it what you're doing, like what you want to do. Don't just like, if you know you have these two talents and you don't have anything else to, there's so much other bullshit you can focus on in the world, but you got two things in front of you.
Yeah.
Just two. Both. You know? That's like having a left and right hand. You know that one's better than the other, but you can still be good at using both of them.
Yeah.
You don't have to do stupid shit with the other one.
In fact, that's like the difference between like a pro and an amateur, is that pros are good with both the right and left foot.
Yeah. So
that's how it is.
Yeah, man. You got two things in front of you.
Your brother got a show coming up?
You know what? I don't know. He just played a show at the White Horse recently. Younger Lovers is his band. You know?
Younger Lovers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Quick shout out. There's nothing like
that. Oh, yeah. That. Younger Lovers. Shout out to Brontes and Ezra.
Yeah, right on, dude.
Yeah.
So where can people find you and or Fate's Hand or what? Like, where are you at online?
You can find me at Gossip Girl, GOZZIP _GURL _XOXO on Instagram, or Fate's Hand Colt. Yeah. On Instagram, or Fate's Hand. That's pretty much it. And just DM me, and I'll, if you're interested in Fate's Hand and you seem like an interesting person, I'll add you on.
How does one join? Is it a joining thing, or you just like decide there's, it's
your there's part a of rule it? About Fate's Hand. If you ask, you ain't.
Oh.
Yeah.
If you ask, you ain't.
Yeah.
Dude, I should have asked that question early on, because that's interesting.
Yeah. That's like, you should just know. Like,
you should just know.
You should always know when you're part of a community. Like, there shouldn't be any questions of acceptance in a community. Like, you shouldn't feel like, if you feel like you're not supposed to be there.
Are we friends? Are we friends right now?
Yeah.
That's the worst question. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, that's, I mean, that's a, one is makes the situation awkward. We're like, hey, am I supposed to be here?
Yeah, like, totally. Yeah, I feel
it's
you,
like
man.
Walking into somebody's house and you're like, if you're not supposed to be there, you know you're not supposed to be there. Because like,
relationships too. Like, what time have you ever asked like, hey, what are we? Are we anything? Like, when is the answer to that question ever yes?
Yeah.
No, that's usually like the beginning of a breakup conversation.
Yeah, or like, you know what?
I guess I'm not feeling it. I was feeling it until you asked that question.
Yeah,
that's how I am, anyways. Cool, man. Well, I hope people find you. This conversation was awesome, clarifying, enlightening. I'm closer to alignment. I'm closer to my lane, and I think that's progress. And I am definitely close to buying property in Oil City.
Yeah, so, man, Oil City. That's where it's at.
That's where the next utopia is going to be, and I'm going to be there, man. I'm not missing the next utopia.
Hopefully.
I'm not missing it.